The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, welcome to Hour 2 of The George Show here on 710 KNUS. Going to be wonderful weather today. 55 degrees is the high. Get outside. Over the weekend, a guy named DJT, President Donald Trump, made this announcement. Maybe it was a prediction that he was going to be arrested out of Manhattan on Tuesday based on an indictment he thought was forthcoming. And then there has been a whole bunch of discussions in the social media and the mainstream media about what would that be for, what does that look like, and it appears that if it were to happen, and it hasn't been denied by the Manhattan DA's office, but you can't imagine they would come out one way or the other yet. Alvin Bragg, he is the elected district attorney for Manhattan, and he hasn't come out and said one way or the other, but he has put out something to his staff that says we're not going to be threatened, intimidated, cajoled, that kind of stuff. We're just going to continue to do our jobs. I wanted to know what the potential procedures were for this if there was an indictment. And so I thought to myself, do I know anybody credible in this area? And I couldn't come up with someone. So instead, I turned to a friend. His name is Ryan Brackley. This guy has done everything. Started his career in the Manhattan DA's office right about the time of, if you remember the Martin Scorsese movie Gangs of New York, Ryan was in the movie. His office was, I think that's where it's originated from, was the Gangs of New York out there at Five Points. And then he moved out to Colorado and became like the number two guy, the assistant DA, in a couple different big offices, and has now turned his sights on getting justice on the other side of the spectrum. But I'm going to let him tell you all about that. Ryan Brackley, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, George.
listen, I told you I was going to ask you this. I gave a little bit of the description, but before we get into this, I don't think I can really describe how much stuff you've done in the criminal justice arena, both here but also in Manhattan. Can you tell listeners about your background?
Sure. So I grew up in a family of defense attorneys. My dad was one of the more prominent, popular criminal defense attorneys in New York, and he kind of, you know, led the way and showed the way towards going into law school and becoming a trial attorney. And I did that, began in the Manhattan DA's office back in 1991. And I focused primarily my entire career there on street crime, on homicides. I was in the sex assault unit. I was a senior trial counsel in the homicide investigation unit, where we focused on old, cold, drug-related murders. I was what was known as a deputy bureau chief in the trial division, where I supervised a group of lawyers who were handling, for the most part, street crime cases, some smaller level investigation, white collar type stuff. But, you know, I spent most of my time rolling around in the streets in Manhattan as a prosecutor and a trial attorney. Came to Colorado in a family move in 2004, and I retired pretty much, but I was terrible at being retired. Not a good stay-at-home dad. I was not a good stay-at-home dad, and I went back to work at the law firm of Brownstein, Hyatt, and Farber.
Never heard
and
of
I
it.
Lasted. Yeah,
is it
I
a
lasted
big one?
About four. It's a little local firm. A couple of lawyers working out of a
little power brokering.
The courthouse. Yeah. They had a couple phone booths at the courthouse, and that was the office. But, you know, the civil practice was not for me. I missed doing what I was doing. I missed working for the people and going to court and doing that kind of work. Some great lawyers at that firm. Dan Garnett, my future boss going forward at that time, was at the firm, and developed a strong bond with him. But I ended up going back to work as a prosecutor at the Attorney General's office, and I started what is now their major case unit. Back at the time, we called it the Capital Crimes Unit. We called it the Homicide Assistance Unit, and basically an investigator and I would drive around the state and help out the smaller jurisdictions with anything they needed on the cases that either were a little bit more complicated or complex for them, or they needed resources. We would just go out and help other offices do their work. And from there, I went down to 18th Judicial District, your old office, and I handled a couple major homicides and a capital crime. When you were elected that office, I figured I was going to get fired, so I left and went up to Boulder, I should say, to work with Stan Garnett as his number two, and eventually found my way to Denver as the number two. And then I eventually joined the family business of defense work, and I've been doing that for about 4 years.
I'm so sorry you left before I got there, because I wouldn't have fired you. Hell, I might have made you the assistant district attorney like Stan did. But instead, you fled up to Weedville up there in Boulder.
Yeah.
And then, right. and candidly, you guys turned the office around. You know who you inherited it from. And between you and Stan, you made that a real trial going office. And it continues on in that mode. Folks don't know this either, under a guy named Mike Dougherty, who you guys used to be prosecutors at the same time in Manhattan.
We were. In fact, when I became a bureau chief, deputy bureau chief in Manhattan, I inherited Mike Dougherty and his crew of young lawyers. So he and I worked together pretty closely for a few years, and he's doing a great job up there in Boulder.
He is.
And
he is.
Continues to do a great job up there in Boulder.
Obviously, everyone wishes he was a Republican, but he's not. The other thing that people don't know about you two is that are freakish runners. I don't know if this still continues, but you guys used to do those ultra marathons. Like, you would find the race that most people would think was a joke and say, yes, let's do that. You guys still doing that?
So we got together on Saturday and ran up Flagstaff Mountain in Boulder. And,
of course,
you know, I was, as I'm walking and limping, my back hurts. I'm cursing the whole way up. You know, he's ahead of me. Wasn't always that way, but now he's ahead of me. He's several years younger than I am. We're still trying. We're still trying to get out there and do these things. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it much longer. I'm getting old.
It's impressive. It's impressive. And let's tap into some of the benefits of that age and the wisdom. I want to go back to your time in Manhattan because, as you know, you've probably been following this too. Alvin Bragg, who's the elected DA, I think he's the Were you under Morgenthau?
I was under Morgenthau. I left
the legend.
Few years before his last. He ran as a 91-year-old his last time out, and he was still as vibrant and vital as ever at that age. He was a legend at the DA, and we considered ourselves extremely lucky to work for him.
At some point, I want to have you back on to ask you about how accurate Law and Order was, but not today. I know. I love the fact that you could have crime to trial within a couple days. It felt like that was the method that they employed, and it worked. Let me ask you about this potential Trump indictment thing, because I want to get your expertise on the procedures here. First off, in your time in the DA's office in Manhattan, did you have other high-profile prosecutions, not because of the nature of the crime, but because of the person being prosecuted?
Frequently, all the time, it would not be unusual to walk down the hall. And as a composite, you could walk down the halls of the Manhattan DA's office, and you can see P. Diddy and J-Lo sitting on one side. You could see Dennis Kozlowski from the Tyco investigation sitting further on down the hall. I saw Donald Trump and his then wife Marla Maples walking down the hall at one point in my time in the Manhattan DA's office. More recently, Harvey Weinstein.
Oh boy.
Prosecuted in the Manhattan DA's office. It was, you know, it was Manhattan. It was the, you know, at the time and probably still the center of the world, and you know, prominent, well-known people were not only victims of crimes, but also committed the occasional crime.
It would be difficult to imagine a higher profile prosecution than one against not just the president of the United States, but this particular president of the United States, who was also a household name before he ever ran for president. The way that you get prosecuted in Manhattan, it's different than, and by prosecuted, I should have said charged, is different than how we do it here in Colorado.
It is. It is, for the most part. This particular prosecution, you know, coming out of a proactive grand jury by the district attorney is not unlike some of the ways we use the grand jury here in Colorado. But the arrest process, the booking process, is certainly different. And it's going to be unusual in this case. And I've been kind of working the phones all weekend with my former colleagues and some current colleagues at the Manhattan DA's office. The former would not talk to me. I mean, they are locked down there. But, you know, wow. we talked about how this could look with Donald Trump. And it's going to be really interesting to see how it works and how it looks, if in fact it does happen. And I believe it's going to happen. I believe the grand jury is likely meeting one final time today, and they will take a vote and likely indict Trump for whatever crimes they're looking at. And I don't really have information on that. I mean, I think I follow the news and social media about what that looks like. But I expect that to happen today.
Sorry, we're talking with Ryan Brackley. He is a former Manhattan prosecutor, former prosecutor, AG, Boulder, Denver, now working to get the guilty free. I'm kidding. He is a defense attorney. When you talk about what it could look like, and let me back up a little bit here. We proceed in Colorado almost 99-ish% more than that through information,
right,
which means somebody just signs a piece of paper that says, "Dear Judge, I have probable cause to believe this person committed a crime, and here are the crimes I think that they committed," and then we attach some sort of, either there's an affidavit or there's some other document that ultimately shows up. In New York, they don't do it that way.
No, in New York, I would say that 99%, it's probably a lot lower these days, but for the most part, most people in New York are prosecuted through arrest. Right, they commit a crime, a cop sees it, or someone calls the police and says that person did it, or there's an investigation and a warrant's issued, and somebody goes out and arrests that person. And so most prosecutions in New York start at an NYPD precinct where, you know, like you saw in Law and Order and NYPD Blue, someone's brought into a precinct in handcuffs, and they're booked. And the booking process means photographs, mugshots, fingerprints, and all the other arrest process and all the paperwork. And that happens while somebody sits in a cell off to the side.
That part happens here to some extent, but what about the charging piece, Ryan, on the grand jury? How many,
right,
like for us, we rarely use the grand jury, and you did it a lot because you were dealing with complex cases and cold cases. How often is it used in New York versus Colorado?
Yeah, and I was getting to that, George.
Sorry, buddy.
New York is what we call a grand jury state. Every felony has to go through the grand jury unless the charged or the accused waives the grand jury. And that rarely happens. Most attorneys put the DA through their steps of, you know, do the grand jury, because you're going to create a transcript of testimony. So most cases go through the grand jury, every felony. But there's usually that arrest piece first. So before a case goes into the grand jury, there's already been the booking. In Colorado, when the grand jury is used, there hasn't been an arrest. It's used to investigate a crime. And once there's an indictment, then you have to figure out how you bring someone in for an arrest. And that's what's going to happen with an indictment of Donald Trump. Since it's a DA indictment, it comes out of the DA's office proactively. It's up to the DA to decide how you bring him in for that booking process and how you get him from the booking process to court. And all that will happen within a day of the indictment, and from booking to court will happen kind of at the same time. It'll be a you know, sequential morning of him going from one place to the other. The question is how it's going to work for Donald Trump. because it's never happened before. It's completely unprecedented. So I'm guessing
in American history.
In American history. So, you know, I promised, I threatened to tell you a story about Susan Sarandon back when I was in the office.
You should do it.
She was going to go to a protest, you know, in the mid-afternoon. And after that, she had to go to a formal event. And she called ahead and said, hey, I'm going to be showing up at this protest. You should arrest me at this time and bring me down for prints and photographs and booking. Get me out of court because I need to be at, you know, Tavern on the Green at 8 o'clock. And, you know, some ill-advised person at the NYPD did that for her, and it was incredibly controversial at the time. You know, how they extend that type of a courtesy or privilege or whatnot to Donald Trump is going to be interesting. And I think when you talk about, you know, possible indictment for crimes where he used his privilege, or he attempted to use his privilege and his wealth to get out of a potentially sticky situation, I don't think you can extend him too many courtesies or privileges in the arrest process. But it's so unusual, because when we talk about a former president and someone who has announced a run to be president in the next cycle, that comes with Secret Service, lifelong, 24/7 Secret Service protection. So, you know, how do you navigate an arrest process, you know, fingerprints and booking, you know, walking out of the courthouse or out of the precinct or out of the DA's office and around the corner?
Well, put him in a cell. Did the Secret Service dude sit in the cell with him, you know, like to make sure that he's not getting roughed up by some biker?
Exactly. So that's obviously not going to happen, right? And it shouldn't happen given the logistics, right? The logistics of who he is, to the extent that he has that type of Secret Service protection. The big question, George, is, and this is the one that we've been debating all weekend, is without exception, when you finish that processing and they take you down the hall and into the elevator, up to the courtroom floors and down the hall of the courtroom, you are cuffed, right? You know, Alan Weisselberg, his accountant and from the Trump Organization, when he went through this same process, he was handcuffed. You know, he had his coat draped over the handcuffs so nobody can see them. Harvey Weinstein, cuffed. You know, recently, Cuba Gooding Jr.
Is there no procedure for him to not be handcuffed, Ryan? I mean, is there no way to just walk him in?
Yeah, somebody can decide to not cuff him, right? Somebody can say, let's not cuff him. And I think that only, I don't think that comes because he's Donald Trump. I don't think that comes because, you know, he's wealthy or privileged. I think that comes because someone from the Secret Service gets with someone from the DA's office and law enforcement and court administration, and they say, we can't do this for security reasons. We can't do it. And there could be a lot of confrontational conversations right now between the Secret Service and the DA's office and court administration about, you know, how can you do this? How can we do our jobs? These handcuffs being led down the hall by one of you guys. That's our job. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really, you know, George, I'm willing to play some action on whether or not he's cuffed or not, if you're interested in that.
I'd love to hear. What do you think there's a better than 50-50 chance he's handcuffed?
I don't know. I my sense is that given the nature of the crime, given the nature of all of the circus he's going to be, and I think he didn't do himself any favors when, you know, he got on social media and called for protests, right? Because a lot of people are thinking, oh, geez, January 6th all over again. And maybe he's forfeited the right to have more of a negotiated, you know, orderly process that most could get in this situation, but for that handcuff piece. So there's clearly been and will be and will continue to be a lot of negotiation. I mean, you know, one of the big questions that people, you know, are out there talking about on radio across the country is, you know, should they even allow him to surrender? Should they get the warrant signed by the grand jury, get a judge to sign a warrant, and they should just go pick him up? And I'm going to tell you, absolutely not, right? Given that Secret Service piece, given the fact that he's in Florida, you know, and then you have to deal with the extradition process and all that. Absolutely not.
Well, that's true, too. That's true, too. Extradition.
Yeah. Right. He and his lawyers, you know, should be given the opportunity like any other, you know, similarly situated, you know, white collar type defendant should be given the opportunity to self-surrender and to negotiate what that looks like. It makes the most sense logistically in this case. Keeps everybody safe, right? It avoids some ridiculous confrontation between his security, his Secret Service staff, and you know, cops coming to get him. And it also will make it less of a circus, less of a spectacle than it's already going to be. So it'll be.
We're talking with Ryan Brackley, former Manhattan prosecutor, one of the best defense attorneys out there. Ryan, what about bail, bond? What do you normally expect in a case like this, and will this one deviate from that? I've heard some people prognosticate because of his social media, you know, imploring of people, protest, save our country, all this other stuff. Some people are like, well, the judge should take that into consideration and deny him bail. And I'm like, on these charges? That'd be crack smoke crazy. I mean, this guy can't disappear anywhere. He can't just slip over the border and become anonymous. I mean, this guy ain't going anywhere. He wants this fight, too. What do you expect to happen with bail and bond?
So I think bail and bond really, you know, there should be certain conditions, right? Don't leave the country. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be subject to much more than that, you know, not contact witnesses, things like that. But, you know, I think bond, you know, I think that's the financial piece, you know, the cash, the surety, the property piece of bail or bond is completely irrelevant in this situation. And I think I would expect the right thing to do would just be to release him on his own recognizance, as they say in New York, and because no amount of bond, no bond condition is going to keep him from coming back to court, right? Bond is all about making sure somebody comes back to court.
Yeah, that's right.
He's coming back to court, right? He's coming back to court. And so, you know, for a crime like this, bond in New York would be somewhere in the, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 range, if that. That's insignificant. Donald Trump. So why bother? If you were to set bond in a really high number, like $1 million or whatever, you know, whatever, just to send a message, that would be punitive. And that would be a move, I think, that would be done to embarrass him. And that's not what bond's about. Bond is about getting him back to court. He's coming back to court. They really shouldn't waste time and the resources of, you know, some court clerk to have to process bond in this case. He's coming to court. I mean, that's how I feel about it.
The final question for you. I know you got to get back to the business there, too. And that is this kind of charge, and we're guessing. We just don't know what the grand jury is going to indict on. But there's some smart people making some smart guesses. And they're saying it's tied to this 2016 alleged payment of about $130,000 to Stormy Daniels, who's a porn star who he had some, you know, affair with or something. I don't know exactly what it was, but it's hush money, and I think that's what everybody thinks.
Right.
And he's going to be prosecuted, they think, under some aspect of a campaign finance thing tied into falsifying business records and all that. Is that the kind of thing that while you were there, the Manhattan DA's office prosecuted? Was it routine? Was it unusual? Do you know?
You know, George, unusual, you know, from start to finish, right? Everything about this is unusual. And yeah, I mean, I've heard you say many times, right? The DA is obligated to follow the law, to enforce the law, the evidence is there, right? They're obligated to do that. But they also have the discretion to not do that, right? And I think in this case, it's appropriate. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do to charge him, but I think it's appropriate to ask why. You know, to your point, are they reviving a 2016, 2018 crime in 2023 where there's literally 2 months left on the statute of limitations?
Yeah, what is the statute of limitations?
It runs out, and I'd have to look specifically at the level of the crime, but I know just from kind of working the phones, statute of limitations runs out in May of this year.
Wow.
So they're getting this case in just under the wire. And, of course, there are reasons why they couldn't do it before, right? One could say, yeah, we would have prosecuted him back in 2020 or 2021, but he was the president. So we had to wait. We were waiting for this. But, you know, it's appropriate to question. I mean, look, he's a 76-year-old man who paid hush money to a porn star, you know, do my math here, 6 or 7 years ago. And when we look at, you know, the spike in violence in big cities like New York, you know, the resources that are going to go into this, the distraction that are going into this are massive now. So I think it's appropriate to question why this case, you know, of all of the, you know, hanging fruit on the Trump tree of things that you could consider prosecuting and charging him for, why this one? You know, I'm going to reserve judgment on that and listen and pay attention to what the case actually looks like.
Will we get to see the indictment after the arrest out there? Will New York release that?
Yeah, so New York will release the indictment pretty much immediately, George, but it's different than a Colorado indictment where they give a factual narrative supporting each of the charges.
Oh, okay.
The indictment in New York simply lists the charge, the date range, and who committed it.
Okay.
So it's not going to give us much, but I expect there'll be plenty of media released about what that case looks like. You know, primarily Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels, and a lot of text messages and emails and stuff like that.
Interesting. Man, I could talk to you all day about this. Ryan Breckley, we'll have you back on, if you don't mind, as this thing continues to develop, because you've got that insider information. Former Manhattan prosecutor and prosecutor out here, AG's office, Boulder, Denver, and now top shelf defense attorney in the Denver metro area. Ryan, thanks for your time on this.
Anytime, George. Always good to talk to you. I'll see you soon.
Great talking to you. See you, buddy. Hey, that was Ryan Breckley. We're going to cut away for a long overdue break, but I just couldn't break away. I think you're getting information there you're just not going to get from the mainstream media and even the online articles. This is a dude that's been there, done that. Like you said, working the phones, giving us good information. I did not know about the 2 months left on the statute of limitations. Listen, what I'd like to know from you about this is, and I've been asking myself this, is this a got to enforce the law against lottie-dottie everybody when it comes here, whether you're the president or a plumber? Is this that kind of a thing, or is this one, like Ryan suggested, that maybe you just let it go because the juice is not worth the squeeze? 303-696-1971. What do you think is going to happen? Is it going to be tomorrow? Ryan says it will be. Is this guy going to be arrested? Cuffs? Is it going to be a dog and pony show? And what's the aftermath? Fascinating stuff here. George Brockler on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Ryan Brackley, a super lawyer, a former Manhattan prosecutor. He's done a bunch of stuff here at the highest levels in prosecution and now does defense work. I found the conversation fascinating. I'm interested to know your response to it. At the end of the day, one, I think Ryan believes this guy's going to be charged probably tomorrow, that the grand jury is meeting today one more time. That is the kind of insider information you can only get here. And that there's going to be an indictment issued, and it's going to be issued tomorrow. And the really the only questions remain, how are they going to affect the arrest, or at least the appearance of the president in court? And I just found it fascinating. I hadn't considered this either. What do you do about the Secret Service? I mean, they don't just put their hands in their pockets. By the way, they're federal. They don't answer to the state. But at the same time, they're not going to keep the state, I think, from enacting an arrest, if that's what's coming. I presume, too, that the president, well, I don't want to presume. I mean, does the president want the arrest? Does he want the photo op? Is that the kind of thing that will get him all the tons of earned media that he needs? He gets to be the martyr. He gins up more support for him. Is that what's going to happen? I'm interested. 303-696-1971. You can hit us on the text, too, at 710-KNUS and the 710KNUS.com app. And then, of course, we have all the texts coming in here right now. Why haven't they indicted Hunter Biden yet? Aren't his alleged crimes worse than Trump with a porn actress? That's from Dave. Yeah, maybe. But again, I don't think those two things have to be prosecuted the same way at the same time for a number of reasons. One, Trump is high profile, right? I mean, this guy was the former president of the United States. Hunter Biden is just the son of a guy who happens to be the president. I'm not saying he shouldn't be prosecuted. It looks like there's stuff to look into there for sure. But at the end of the day, I don't think you can say we can't prosecute one for the other. It's just the absence of that makes it seem more political. That is for sure. I guess here in Ryan, I believe that he's going to be arrested. Here's where I come down on this. And as you know, listening to the show, I'm not one of the guys that drinks Trump's Kool-Aid. And no matter what he does, he's always right. And everybody who attacks him is always a bad person. I'm not that guy. But I think it would be such a huge mistake to press on with arresting him and making there be a handcuff moment and bringing him into court. And yeah, I acknowledge maybe that's a little bit different than what he what Ryan described as takes place with some other white-collar criminals and those that get accused. But so what? He is different. The goal of the criminal justice system is to treat similarly situated people similarly. And honestly, nobody is similarly situated to this guy. So the idea that we're going to make him go through, and this is the coach taking off right here. Great to see you, buddy.
Good. Thanks.
See you
too,
we'll
man.
See you back in
right,
see you
on.
Back in town. That was Coach Jenkins. They were staying at the same hotel. The fact that they would treat him the same when he's not similarly situated, that's a problem. I think that's a mistake. I also think it makes it look hyper-political. The other part that makes it look hyper-political is the damn timing of it, right? Like, I understand, hey, we couldn't prosecute him while he was the president. Okay, but you could have done the investigation back then. Now, I understand that grand juries are unique in the fact that they can only meet for a limited period of time. They don't just exist forever. But they're usually one-year periods of time. I should have asked Ryan if that's pretty normal for New York, because that's true here in Colorado. But the other piece of this thing is that his indictment appears to have taken place 2 years after he left office, more than 2 years, and 2 months before the statute of limitations ran out. Are you telling me that it took them that long to gin up? By the way, the crime itself is a misdemeanor unless they can tie it into another crime, the falsification of business records. And so they have bootstrapped the fraudulent business records with a campaign finance violation, claiming that the $130,000 payment to Michael Cohen, which he used to try to hush Stormy Daniels, that in and of itself was a separate crime. And that campaign finance violation elevates the fraudulent business records to a felony. I mean, it looks tortured. It makes it feel like this is just political, with a DA, by the way, whose rap right now is that he's a pretty hyper-partisan guy. And so, in my mind, I think Ryan's right. You got to let this one go. And then the prosecutor in me says, wait, what message are we sending? That if you are a big enough political figure, that the law doesn't apply to you, or that it applies differently? Because I'm a guy whose gut reaction is, if you broke the rules, if you broke the law, there have to be some kind of consequences. And those consequences are usually doled out by the system. Well, what do you do here? I'm interested to know, should this guy be held accountable? And if so, how? 303-696-1971. Do we just give the Don a pass on this? If so, why? And if the answer is he didn't commit a crime, okay, I understand that. I want to hear from folks who say, oh, yeah. I think he probably did run a... What was that, Bill? You know what? Let's do this. Let's cut away for a break. Let Frank know. No, you know what? Let's take Frank now, because I know we have Alpine coming up. Hey, Frank, you're on 710 Canuous. What do you think?
Hey, George, thanks for your special observations on this particular case. Super interesting case. I want to give you a couple of three visuals. You remember, you ever seen a table of dominoes and one guy tips it and the whole thing goes
down?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
The other thing was back in the Old West. You remember the gunfighter, the kid that's always sizing up the greatest, the fastest gun in the West? He
right.
Had to decide, is this guy getting a little old now? Can I get him? Can I take him? And then what happens if he does take him? All the other young guns come after him. And my dad told me that in the Army, I always used to say, oh, I want to be a machine gunner. And he'd say, no, son, that's the last one you want to be, the machine gunner, because everybody trains their fire on you.
Right. They want to take you out first.
So is this, how do you size up this guy, Bragg? Is he that good, or is he just out for notching his gun, or the best chance to take a shot at Trump and all that?
It feels that way, because it feels like at least the description that we've been given, of the charges is it feels tortured, and it feels like an effort to find a way to accuse him of a felony. Now, let's be honest, too. Trump has a whole lot of other legal issues at different places, including the federal government and in Georgia. So this seems to me to be an unnecessarily tortured way to try to get him. If it's a misdemeanor, but for them trying to bootstrap in this other crime, this campaign, then charge him with the misdemeanor and let him fight it out over there. But Mark, this feels like an effort to put him in cuffs.
Did you hear Hugh Hewitt this morning?
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
He brought up Judge Jackson's admonition in 1940 to prosecutors to not prosecute the person, but prosecute a case. Have a good case and make sure it was worthy of going to the trouble to prosecute, not just picking out a guy, which it seems like you say, this is a bit tortured, and he's just trying to call attention to it, and he wants the visual. But what happens to this guy, you know, Bragg, after he does this to him? I don't know. Is he willing to risk his whole career? Maybe. I don't know. That's why I was asking how you size the guy up.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. He's not the same as Morgenthau or the guy that came after Morgenthau, whose name escapes me, but Cyrus Vance, I'm sorry. But he's been in the office a while, is my understanding. I don't know, Frank. I mean, my concern here, too, though, is I'm willing to say, and I get what Ryan Brackley had said, let this one go. Like, what are we getting out of this? That is a very fair, justice-minded approach to this thing, too. But the other part of this is I don't want to create a precedent, now that he's gotten this far down the field, of saying, well, if you're big enough fish and the circus is going to be out of control enough, and if it's going to look political enough, you're somehow immune from a certain level of wrongdoing. I don't want to do that either.
Yeah, no, it's a tough call. I don't know, but the left is certainly motivated and gets all kind of emotional about Trump that does things that, you know, precedence has not done, and I hate to say it, but I'm afraid that's what this is, too.
I'm anxious to see how it plays out tomorrow. I'm also disappointed to hear what Ryan said, which is, look, the indictments out of Manhattan aren't going to have all the factual basis like we do in Colorado. They're just going to have the names of the charges. I'd love to know more, and we will over time. I just think this gives Trump more credibility when he says, see, the system is out to get me. See, they're trying to bring me down. Now you look at this and you go, maybe he's right, at least with this part of it. And I think that's a disappointing potential outcome for this.
You think?
I worry about it. Frank, hey, thanks for the call, man.
Okay,
thanks for getting
us
kicked off this week. Listen, Frank's line is open, 303-696-1971. But here's the deal. We're going to cut away for a break. We're going to be joined with our buddies from Alpine Planning. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Kwame Spearman, a former candidate for mayor of Denver. We'll talk with him about that in the future. And we'll get right back to it after that. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. It's Amy's walk-up music, folks. She talks with angels. She never mentions the word recession. Amy Duncan from Alpine Planning, thanks for joining us. I hope the weekend was great.
Oh, goodness, George. I'm telling you, if I was going to pick walk-up music, I hate to say it, that's a great tune, but it wouldn't be that one. So, well, my weekend was fine. How was yours, friend?
It could have been better if the boys had played better in this baseball tournament, but it was great to hang out with them nonetheless.
There you go. There you go. Awesome. Well, happy first day of spring.
Boom.
And take a look at these markets. You cut me off if you need to, George, but got some thoughts here on this banking crisis and everything that's going on. So
tell
take
us.
A look, first of all. We've got positive numbers for the Dow and the S&P, right? The Dow is up about 1%, up about 300. S&P positive as well, up about 16 points. NASDAQ, though, is negative this morning. And despite Friday's sell-off, the S&P and the NASDAQ both finished positive last week, which I think a lot of investors might have lost track with, kind of despite the panic. Meanwhile, looking at gold, right? Gold closed on Friday at an 11-month high, almost
wow.
Over 2,000 again. And so right now, I think it's always a challenge for Brian and Gabe and me to tell your listeners what might be, you know, relevant for the big picture planning, but also talk about what is very timely right now without overdoing something on one subject. But nonetheless, this banking issue is important. Obviously, week before last, we saw SVB. Then last week, Credit Suisse. Now UBS, of course, has agreed to buy Credit Suisse.
Right.
So most investors are basically hoping that all this turmoil in the banking sector will prompt the Fed to pause on a rate hike this week. I think that is a reality, although I actually think they will raise rates just by less than expected. And really,
what does that mean? What's less than expected? Is that,
I think maybe a quarter point is a fair expectation. Okay. If they completely tap the brakes, that would be welcome for investors. But, you know, again, we'd have to readdress it at the April meeting. So, again, sentiment is fragile right now. I don't know, actually, George, that I have time to get into some of the other stuff I was going to hit on. But I think, you know, just talking real quick about FDIC insurance, because this is a big deal, right? So,
yeah.
FDIC is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. It's an independent agency of the U.S. government. And essentially, an account is insured up to $250,000 per depositor, per bank, and per ownership category. So you do see people try to play the game of spreading out different registrations, different banks. I'm not a huge fan of that. But nonetheless, if you've got less than $250,000 in one checking account at a large bank, you really don't have a reason to be concerned. So I'll kind of wrap up, actually, sir. Again, this week is the Fed meeting. All eyes are going to be on that. Just remember, right, shock like this does create, you know, excessive volatility in markets. Rarely do panic decisions pan out with success, and we're seeing, you know, we're seeing stocks rebound this morning. So stay on track, and if you have some questions or some concerns, please do call.
Amy, it's hard to imagine you jamming more good information in there. What I like too is
I had a whopper, but
in this financial world, I was going to say, in this financial world of spinning plates, it's like the old Ed Sullivan show. Like, you guys have to stay on top of 8 million different moving pieces, and you do it with aplomb. That was huge. That was great. I'm glad to hear that as well. Listen, Alpine Planning Group, it's a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Investing, as always, it's a matter of trust. And they, as in Amy, Brian, Gabe, they're prepared to earn your trust. Call them today, 303-843-0918, 303-843-0918. Amy, fantastic job. We'll talk with you soon.
Hey, have a good one, George.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Yeah, I just love how smart they make us on this financial stuff. Listen, when we come back, it's going to be Kwame Spearman was a candidate for Denver mayor's race. We'll talk to him about that in Denver itself, and then we'll get back to the Trump topic itself. Give us a call when you can, 303-696-1971. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.